Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I have Stormforge. Stormforge is great people. They're sponsors of mine, but just fantastic people. I don't support companies or don't work with companies that I don't feel have an amazing product, but also amazing people. This is founder and CEO Matt Provo. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to connect.
So, you know, again, big fan of you all. You know, I had O'Fair on. We talked about the technology. I want to talk about the company itself because it's you have such an interesting background. I want to share this because I think it makes even the value of Stormforge even more. So let's talk about your journey all the way to founding Stormforge.
I'm a product guy by background, but my career actually started in the nonprofit world. I'm a big believer in storytelling and using the power of stories, but also circles of influence. I believe that each of our circles of influence individually, and then accordingly to what we're a part of, need to have an impact. So it's whatever we're about should be more than just about ourselves. And so I was fortunate enough to start out my career understanding how to build a plane while it's flying in starting an organization that was centered around a documentary film telling the story of kids who in Africa were brainwashed, forced to fight as child soldiers, and ultimately we created a film and we told the story of these kids, and it went from a couple college kids in RVs to Oprah's couch like pretty quickly, and it was an incredible experience. And yet when this was built, we had nowhere to funnel and support or direct people's support. And so this was the original part of my journey. I moved to Africa for a number of years and really.
Well, let's talk about that. What part of Africa did you move to?
Northern Uganda.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. So yeah. Uganda is typically it's not your easy street place to move to. I mean, there's things like malaria, there's infighting, there's all this. Shows your spirit, shows you but tell me why you made that move.
Well, the original piece was going with a couple of buddies in college to whitewater raft the Nile River. I mean, legit, let's go have some fun. And then we found this story of these kids. We were taken to this location where kids were walking 10 miles each way each day to sleep outside under the protection of the army so that they would not be abducted. I believe that wholeheartedly we're responsible for the knowledge that we gain. And as a white American male, to be exposed to this was incredibly shocking. And I just couldn't stay silent. And so happened to be that I knew some, I was there with some people that were film students, and they had their cameras, and we had an opportunity to tell the story. And from that point forward, my mission was making sure that whatever I'm involved in has an impact beyond just simply creating something. And so from that point forward, I went and kind of cut my teeth in the corporate world, so to speak, at Apple. I was leading a big team there for a number of years, kind of a product guy by background. And as innovative as Apple is, I missed, building the plane while it was flying. And
what did you work on when you were at Apple, if you don't mind me asking?
I led a big team that was responsible for building all the technology used in the retail stores. So when you go into a store, you have hopefully a great experience, but it's powered by pretty awesome technology. Whether you're buying products, whether you're getting products supported, et cetera.
Can we talk about that? So let's double click on that, because again, they couldn't have picked a better person to be able to fuse that human aspect with the technical part. If you think about it, it's all about the experience. Yeah. You think about anything we do, right? Business, whatever. It's about how somebody interacts with that thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, you have these experiences and you go like into the corporate world and you're like, look, at the center of all this is the human.
Yeah. It's the human. And it's also the, what are we doing with the impact that we have and how are we creating change and doing good? And ultimately, again, circle of influence. I mean, you look at a $1 trillion company like Apple still being focused on, I mean, look at the new campus around, you know, sustainability and, you know, carbon neutral or, you know, all this. So it was like this really radical intersection for me of those worlds colliding. And I just couldn't help not building something myself that, that tried to intersect those two worlds.
Got it. So after Apple, we went, where'd we go?
I started and ultimately failed a couple companies.
Let's talk about that. Do you think, and I'm going to double click on this, do you think that failure is a motivator for a success, like basically is a prime motivator? Because I believe this, and I'll tell you, let me tell you from my experience.
Yeah.
My dad owned 15 pizzerias growing up. Okay. Bankrupt. The man bankrupt in 1987. We were hand to mouth, man. It was like going back and forth. Those times taught me so much on failure.
Yeah.
And taking those things and being able to say, I learned so much from that. And you can, and it's that story is time and time again, right? Where you learn from that failure and you build something that's even better. So talk to me about that failure and how you flipped it.
149 no's on raising capital and trying to understand how to connect an awesome team with differentiated technology to the right market timing. And I really believe that all three of those things have to line up in order, you know, for growth to really be there. And I would say I've learned a ton in periods of growth, but I've learned orders of magnitude more from failure. And nobody wants to talk about that, I don't think. Or at least not, you know, the response will be, it's easy to talk about that when you're running a company that's raised a bunch of money and is growing. But the truth of the matter is, I think in those failures is when you have an opportunity to step back and really say, what did I learn? And it's like this mind meld and aggregation of learning that could take place if handled appropriately. So, you know, I've always been a tinkerer. I've always had ideas. I've always been frustrated with complexity. And you know, the first few iterations were my attempts at just getting stuff out of my head and into some semblance of a business. And, you know, it was a rough go for about 3 years. I mean, I remember, just a lot of, you know, a lot of no's. So.
What you build and where it takes you shouldn't be limited by your database. CockroachDB helps developers build and scale apps with fewer obstacles, more freedom, and greater efficiency. So you can forget about the database and trust that it just works. Kubernetes friendly, open source, and indestructible, CockroachDB makes it easier to build and scale apps. It gives companies the freedom to serve customers anywhere, and it's backed by world-class documentation and excellent dedicated support. Discover CockroachDB, the most highly evolved distributed SQL database on the planet. Kubernetes native and built from the ground up to help companies of all sizes, including Bose, Comcast, and Equifax, scale fast, survive anything, and thrive anywhere. Sign up for a free 30-day trial and get a free t-shirt at cockroachlabs.com/podcast. That's cockroachlabs.com/podcast. And then, okay, so from this, rise from the ashes, right? There was Stormforge. So let's talk about starting up Stormforge. Am I skipping something there, or just like, would you say like then we ran into Stormforge? We're like, okay, the next one I'm going to do it. I've learned from this and this is what I'm going to do. And that's Stormforge.
I went back to school for a little bit. So as far as my personal journey, I went back to school. I didn't, you know, I said I was a product guy by background, and I was trying to understand how to intersect that world with business, and was sort of floundering a little bit on some of the necessities from a business perspective. And I had no formal business training. So I did go back and do graduate school for business. And it was a risky move because, you know, personally speaking, my wife had just been, had finished graduate school. We had two kids at the time. We now have three, and, you know, it was a bit of a risky move. But was, you know, she supported me, you know, and I think that was a really interesting period to learn. I mean, frankly, and then to build relationships and build a network. And, even today on behalf, you know, with alongside Stormforge, you know, two of our original investors and board members, came from directly from relationships that were built through my grad school kind of experience in business school. And I really, I think rounded out my, my, you know, core ability to actually be able to justify, you know, starting and ultimately growing a business.
Got it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to the Stormforge story. So I want to understand this. Like, what problem were you originally trying to solve with Carbon Relay, now Stormforge?
Yeah. So our first password at the company was hashtag Watson sucks. And the reality of the situation was, I was very frustrated about these barriers to entry of adoption of AI in the enterprise. And, you know, a couple of these were, you know, crazy upfront data requirements, really long implementation cycles, and then ultimately like really high price points. But then when you connected that to like the lack of integrity at the core of these solutions from a technology perspective, what you found was, you know, really big marketing budgets and not a bunch of reality under the hood. And that frustrated me a lot. And as I was finishing my second year in grad school, I knew I was never going to be the guy that was going to, all due respect to a bunch of my friends and classmates, like go onto Wall Street or go into finance after going to business school. And so I started going across the river and hanging out with people in the School of Applied Mathematics and engineering and all of this. And
did any of them win the Fields Medal, just like Good Will Hunting?
Just like a couple, but like only two. So, yeah.
You know, I got to throw in a Good Will Hunting thing for the Boston stuff. I got to.
There was a little Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, you know, chalkboard, like what is that? But no, I mean, building relationships. And then, you know, the reality is we were very fortunate to have an original investor who was super patient. And we basically started the company with a premise of how do you put a bunch of difficult problems at the center of the room? And how do you fill the seats around those problems with people with diverse and unique skill sets, mindsets, and background? We knew we wanted to build real AI or machine learning at our core, but we had no idea how we wanted to apply it, to be totally honest. And so we iterated a bunch. We started with building a core engine that ultimately represented itself as holograms you could have a conversation with. And then we got a little creeped out by how many people were requesting for us to basically build their, you know, digital memorial for them. And we built we built this experience where you could have a pretty robust conversation with President Obama, and it looked like him, it moved like him, it spoke like him, and you could see him and you could interact with him. And as awesome as that was, and it was awesome. At the end of the day, it was not going to be a scalable opportunity for us, and so we had pivot one, which was, take the core machine learning and apply it to a different problem. And at that time, Google had put out this paper around, using machine learning to reduce the amount of electricity that's consumed in their data centers. And we had a couple original data scientists who are still with us today who basically said, I think we can beat that. Like, we can beat those, we can beat those targets. And then we did. We beat the targets. And so same core engine being fed with, additional data sources, et cetera. And then we pivoted again. And here's the interesting piece. We were delivering results in the energy consumption space. The problem was that every facility we would go into was so unique from an IT and, kind of infrastructure standpoint that we were going to be a white vans and ladders company. So we were going to be, a services company. And we had, millions of dollars in revenue at that point. But it was going to plateau pretty quick. And we didn't want to be the company that had to start from ground zero every time. And so one of those original data scientists, PhDs, that I met while I was in grad school, he single-handedly with two other engineers who are original contributors to Kubernetes, lifted and shifted us from Docker Swarm to Kubernetes. And it was in this lift and shift where we realized, there's some real pain points here. And these were the days where you still, this was 2017. So you were still, it was still really painful to get your first cluster up and running. And some of the day one problems were still there. Plus, the concept of trying to tune resources was not a thing. And so that's
if you think about it, right, in the beginning of Kubernetes, right, it was just like, let me move a couple of apps. These are stateless applications, your NGINXs, your front ends. It wasn't too crazy, right? And so you had kind of a limited, breadth of things that you're kind of moving over, right? So it's like, but there was nothing out there, because what did you do? You went to the docs page and you saw that, by default, it was one core and X amount of memory allocated to it. Usually people just go with damn defaults. And you know that. We all know that, right?
So spot on. I call it, middle of the fairway. So whatever you were sort of expecting to get from, let's call it, the database that you were using and the associated defaults that shipped with it, you didn't have time to sort of say, how do I think about the trade-offs between cost and performance? And so this was a set of tasks that you said defaults are defaults for a reason. Let me just take those recommendations, and the middle of the fairway solution is sort of good enough, because I've got a bunch of other things I need to work on if I'm the if I'm the developer. And that's the original sort of premise for what we started to really kind of attack as a set of pain points.
Sivo is an alternative to the big hyperscale cloud providers. They've launched the world's first managed Kubernetes service powered exclusively by K3S. With sub-90-second cluster launch times, a simplified Kubernetes experience, and predictable billing, Sivo is on a mission to create a better developer experience. Get $250 free credit to get started. Sign up today at civocloud.com/podcast. That's civo.com/podcast. Go check them out. Can I put a quote here? And this is cost savings. The average StormForge customer sees a 50% improvement in their application performance, or 50% lower cloud costs in fewer than 3 days.
Yeah.
I'm in sales. I was in sales. Now I'm in the community. Yeah. But like that to me, I could easily just print and repeat, rinse and repeat. That is an amazing stat, because what is the biggest thing with Kubernetes or distributed computing? It's what's the business case for it? There's a freaking business case for it right there. Incredible. Yeah. I want to understand that stat. I want everybody to know, like, you sign up with StormForge, you're going to have this capability. It's incredible.
Yeah, we felt like people should no longer have to choose between cost and performance, number one, as I mentioned. Number two, if we could, going back to the original kind of barriers to entry conversation, how do you get the solution to a place where it does all the right automation, and at the same time empowers the developer to be a part of the experience versus automates them out of the experience? That sweet spot has always been our target. And then the other piece is, we did not want to be we did not want to be another MIT spinoff that never saw the light of day, that built really amazing algorithms at the core that were so heavy they would never be able to be productized and ultimately should stay in academia. All due respect to my friends in academia. That stat is very real, number one. So much so that I've personally made a guarantee behind it. And that guarantee is, if we don't hit the kind of numbers that we set, I'll personally pay the cloud bill for the organization. Alongside that, I'll donate the same amount to a green charity, either that we're partnered with or that the developer or the end user decides they'd like to donate. And, you know, really at the end of the day, if you strip everything else away, that's all we're focused on, is being able to provide those results on a consistent basis. We've got many, 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 many deployments now. And the stat is real. The average the average results are, as you spoke, we've never been below 30%, by the way. So
if you're thinking, again, an enterprise level saving 30%, and let's just say, again, you're a decision maker, why wouldn't you bring in StormForge? Like, you could literally just add on the box, you're pretty much guaranteed X amount, right? Yeah. And that's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, it's, we're just getting started. One of the pieces is we've just been building our kind of go-to-market team across the last 9 months, 12 months. And so that's a piece of it. I mean, the honest answer is we don't have name recognition yet at scale, and that's okay. And that's a path that we're on. But yeah, it's sort of a no-brainer. Like we reduce the amount of requirements aggressively as much as we can to get going. And yeah, I mean, even the 3-day time to value stat is generous. We typically see results within 24 hours. That's a pretty exciting spot to be in.
That's fantastic. So is this what we're calling what's the cloud waste pledge? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this was my walking through the neighborhoods and sort of like brainstorming and thinking, why do companies waste so much money? you know, as it relates to cloud. Like, obviously, the proliferation of cloud is increasing like crazy, you know, adoption wise, but so is spend, you know, spend on the cloud. And if you compare spend to waste, you know, through the lens of something like over-provisioning of resources. So again, this trade-off of I'm going to over-provision, I'll pay a little more so that I don't have to, you know, put performance at risk. You know, if you look at companies like Target, for example, where you have a Father's Day weekend at Target, where all the POS systems go down because of a misconfiguration error, you're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in lost business. And that's reputational risk, right? That's created. But the same is true around cloud waste and cloud, you know, cloud spend versus waste. So when you think about like, it's upwards of $15 to $20 billion were wasted on idle resources last year, number one. Number two, data centers generally, whether they're on-prem in the cloud or a combination of both, represent, you know, 2.5 to 3.5% of the world, not North America, not our bubble in the United States of America, but of the world's total energy consumption. Okay. That's like, put that in perspective, data centers or the cloud. And then, typically, well, in aggregate, data centers are emitting 100 million metric tons of CO2 into the universe on an annual basis, and that number is rising. So when you think about something like Kubernetes and then cloud native, and then, you know, how do we responsibly transition into the cloud? This is where our campaign comes in. So we're saying we're pledging to remove 100 million, basically $100 million of cloud waste from the ecosystem or environment just in 2021. And we'll do that through a couple avenues. One is through obviously through our customers and how we're engaging with our customers, but also through really asking and pleading for people to join and sign our pledge. And this pledge is connected to, you don't have to be a customer of ours, a StormForge customer. The pledge is connected to the things that you can be doing in order to help to reduce your own individual or you know, within your circle of influence contribution to cloud waste.
We'll have a link in the show notes about this so you all can check this out on StormForge's page. And I'll probably flash it on screen pretty much the whole episode so everybody can see what's going on. Again, you know, big time. I was fans of you all, and not just because you're a sponsor, it's just in a lot of it, you know, I have a couple of friends that are there as well, but just, it's just, you know, again, it's an amazing mission and thinking about these things, like I said, thinking about your journey, thinking about, you know, what you did with Kony initially and what you, you know, when you were in Uganda. This to me is full circle. It's like, yeah, you know, you had these early things that happened to you. This, you know, you had one failure in business, you were at Apple, and all these culminated with where you are right now. It's phenomenal, man. It's great stuff. So let me ask you this. What does community mean to you? And I ask that to a lot of, like, you know, founders. It's like, you know, we I talk about this all the time about how community is, you know, the open source community. I think Kubernetes community is probably the best in the world. It's just how it should be. It's like everybody's interacting with, even competitors are interacting with each other, trying to figure out what's best for the end user. But tell me, what does community mean to you?
Diversity, inclusion, and empowerment. I mean, like, at the end of the day, you know, all three of those things, I think, it map to, you know, circle of influence. And I think circle of influence individually, but then if you think about the cloud native and Kubernetes ecosystem as it's grown, the power of a movement is unquenchable, right? And so When we released Kony and it did 100 million views in 6 days, before YouTube was like a legit real thing, like 100 million views in 6 days, until about 2015 or 16 was the fastest uptick in, you know, in views ever. And, what it spoke to was the power of community and rallying people around a movement. And I think that what's happening within the Kubernetes ecosystem is quite similar. And in fact, really, really, really powerful. And so, when I think about community, it definitely is connected to the diversity, the inclusion piece, and the empowerment piece, because there's structure within the Kubernetes ecosystem and how there's obviously like very clear structure on how expectations and, you know, how you contribute. But at the same time, this really kind of beautiful balance of inclusion and empowerment continues to be supported, and it's scaling. And so I think that's pretty amazing. And so from a larger community standpoint, I think that's a big piece of it. And I think if you look at the, for example, the growth of the CNCF landscape, right? And you look at how that's, how that's grown and taken place over time. The other piece of this is like how many lives have been impacted, how many jobs have been created, how many, and I think that's pretty fantastic as well, because when you can stand by the values that are core to a community, and then those values transcend to organizations and companies and other things that are ultimately developed, Stormforge being an example of that, I think that's pretty fantastic.
I talked to the Godfathers and Sarah Novotny, this is the beginnings of Kubernetes and the community it is. And, I don't think they expected it to be like this. But I think, like you said, they started in this very amazing, grounding principles, right? Inclusion, diversity, and those things. And the people that brought in are perpetuating that. Stormforge is perpetuating that. Like what I'm doing with the podcast is perpetuating that, right? So like that to me is, we have to continue to do that, be inclusive and, bring people in, have them be involved, because like you said, it's this virtuous cycle.
I mean, it would not be probably inaccurate to think that there's tens, if not hundreds of conversations happening right this moment, connected to the community and the power of the ecosystem that's being developed. I don't care whether you're on the podcast or on in other locations, right? And other channels, like it's pretty powerful.
And the other part of this too is like what I'm seeing a lot more of as a globalization aspect. So I'm seeing like, I mentioned the open source project that we work on. I work on Falco, and it's like I'm seeing people from Brazil and India trying to translate our website and documents, because they want to be involved. They want to be part of that. To me is what we need to do, is perpetuate and get more of that people getting involved. So that's, and again, it's all because it's so welcoming as a community. The CNCF is brilliant at that. So that's great. So let me ask you my final question. And I ask everybody this question, but what work are you most proud of?
Oh, interesting question. I know being able to be a part of seeing kids who were abducted, brainwashed, and forced to fight. So many of them being forced to actually, kill their own families, and to see them to come through that, to escape and to come back into society and be welcomed, right? So think about this. You you get abducted from your village. You do all these horrific acts because you're brainwashed, and then you're welcomed back into the same community. And you have the support that you need. That's definitely a huge piece. But this building, what we're building now at Stormforge, and in fact, the being at the tip of the iceberg on the impact that we can have, providing jobs like we're providing and career opportunities, and being able to connect that to something like, I mean, if it's 100 million this year, it'll be 400 million next year, you know, and it'll, and today, one of the biggest issues in our society is in fact, carbon emissions, global warming, and sort of our, you know, environmental concerns. And so I'm very, very proud and thankful for the opportunity to be involved in this kind of work. And I think, like you said, it's really full circle at this point. And I think we're just getting started. We've got a lot of, you know, big stuff in front of us, but we take every step of that very, very seriously in how we move forward. So,
Matt, we did it all today. We talked about Stormforge, and again, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being, you know, you've been a huge supporter of my show and me, and I will always have your back, not only because you all are great people, but you know, the technology is amazing. It's real. You can save money with this. You can do amazing things, and they're trying to help the world. Yeah. So support Stormforge, everybody. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.